Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering, and this week I'm joined in the studio by Ellen Coyne, who's political correspondent with the Irish Times, Paul McAuliffe, TD, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin North West, Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow, and John Downing, who's political columnist with the Irish Independent. And thank you all for coming in for the chats today. First up now, the former Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader Bertie Ahern has withdrawn from the running, we heard this overnight, to be the next president. We're going to take a little listen now to what he had to say.
In truth, it's because of respect of Fianna Fáil party, its membership, and its elected and unelected people that I feel I could have been a good president for the people, and feel that I've given the time to do so. I could have run a campaign to seek their support. But I think without the full support of the leadership of your party, in all my time in Fianna Fáil, I've never seen a period where the leadership really lose out in these things. That's the way it's been in my time and other times as well. And particularly when the leadership indicates so strongly and, you know, personally get involved for a candidate, it's unlikely that the leader loses out in these things. Of course, as you've said, there were other avenues open to me. That's been very, very clear to me. But as a former leader of the party, I respect Fianna Fáil, its legacy, far too much to even consider that independent idea. And I've always been a Fianna Fáil person.
I've always been a Fianna Fáil person. Paul, should he have been given a shot?
Look, I think Bertie has made a calculation that in order to secure the nomination within the parliamentary party, he would have liked to have had the support of the leadership. He's saying that that's a significant factor in gaining the support. Bertie's around a long time. There's no doubt he would have been a very qualified candidate. You know, he has a huge international experience. And there's no doubt his work in the Good Friday Agreement, I think, would have stood to him. But he's made that calculation that he can't secure a nomination through the parliamentary party. Billy Keller, on the other hand, has sought a nomination, as has Jim Gavin. And next Tuesday, we will select the candidate. Mm-hmm. Now, I obviously have a preference in the form of Jim Gavin.
You've gone for Jim Gavin.
Why did you
make that choice?
I suppose maybe, unlike many in the parliamentary party, I've had the opportunity maybe to know Jim a little bit longer than him. I offered him the Freedom of the City and nominated him for that in 2019. And I suppose being around Dublin, you bump into him at different things. I think both I as a nominator, but I think the voters will have the same choice. You end up picking somebody who resonates with you. And I suppose the things that Jim has been...
And Billy doesn't, does he not?
Well, in my view, the things that Jim has been involved in, both in the Defence Forces, in terms of his time in the GAA, but also with Boher, you know, his experience in terms of the UN and European regulation of aviation, like, they're all things that resonate with me, but I think they'll resonate with a broader group of people beyond Fianna Fáil. Mm. And, like, this isn't a contest to be the president of Fianna Fáil. That role is filled. It's to be the president of Ireland, and we have to look at building a coalition of people that will support Jim Gavin
beyond the party.
Beyond the party, and I think that's why many people in the party have decided to support Jim.
We had Jim O'Callaghan here yesterday, and he's gone for Jim as well. But he very honestly said, "I might have got this wrong. I don't know." You know, because you don't know how Jim Gavin is going to be in debates and in the rough and tumble of this campaign.
Yeah, that is true. I suppose, having seen him in action, I think he will be a very strong performer. But Jim is only saying what anybody nominating a candidate will be, in the same way as Jennifer doesn't know all that will happen to her candidate in the campaign. You know, you may get it wrong, but you make a calculation, and I believe Jim is a strong supporter of Jim Gavin, and will support him in the campaign. But let's be honest, we'll support the candidate that we pick on Tuesday, and we're sort of a little bit ahead of ourselves in terms of looking beyond Tuesday.
Okay, John, I mean, you've been watching this as we all have. Yeah. Do you think Billy Kelleher can do this and perhaps upset the Fianna Fáil leadership at this stage?
No.
You don't?
I'd be very surprised if Billy comes through. I wouldn't rule it out, because he's a formidable campaigner and he has form in disrupting the official narrative of Fianna Fáil. The most recent example was 2020, when he got on the ticket for the Ireland South, for the European Parliament, against... He was not the preferred candidate of leadership and HQ. He was director of elections, national director of elections for Fianna Fáil in 2016, and the party performed far better than even opinion polls were predicting. So he has this unpredictable characteristic, but even at that, I will be very surprised.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's going to be Jim Gavin?
I think all signs are he needs 35 votes. Surely to God, he begins with 26. That is to say, the junior and senior ministers and the 10 party chairs, 10 party committee chairs from Fianna Fáil. Well, surely to God he can get 9 mm-hmm. votes.
Okay.
We'll have to see. Mind you, I might be saying this
again. Listen, I'll have you back on Tuesday or Wednesday when the dust settles on the decision.
I'll bring a big hat. Plenty of pepper and salt to eat
indeed.
It.
Yeah. We'll enjoy that. Yeah. Ellen, the campaign is very much underway now, isn't it? Because we had Heather Humphreys out at over the last couple of days. She did an interview. Tom Clonan then, hot on her heels, criticising her for her record on disability payments. How do you think that played for Heather Humphreys?
I thought it was really interesting because I think it was the first chink in her armour. I think it's a sensitive area for Fine Gael. I think the bruise is still there from the unsuccessful family and care referendums last year, which Heather Humphreys was the director of elections for Fine Gael. Also, if you think of the area of disabilities, it was probably the landmark memorable moment of the general election with Simon Harris's interaction in Kanturk. I was talking to Tom Clonan yesterday and he said that he felt that Heather Humphreys had her super value moment now with him on this. So this is basically, it comes down to a dispute of accounts. We know that they both met each other to talk about this controversial green paper on disability payments, so controversial that it was mothballed within 72 hours of Simon Harris becoming the Taoiseach last year. It's notable that the consultation on it was still due to continue until July 2024. And basically, Tom Clonan is saying that Heather Humphreys was actually adamantly in favour of this, that she saw this as being the pathway forward. Fine Gael is saying that this was only ever a consultation document, that no decision had kind of been made. I think it was notable that in the statement from Fine Gael's spokesman for Heather Humphreys and her campaign last night, they were very careful to say that she respects Tom Clonan because he is so well regarded and so very well got. They didn't exactly kind of push back on his account of that meeting. But I think there could be danger here if this is something, particularly her stewardship of that referendum, the fact that the so-called Woman's Place Amendment will probably stay in the Constitution now forever, mm-hmm. certainly for the medium-term political future, who would try to repeal that again. I think that could be tender, dangerous ground for Heather Humphreys in the campaign.
But look, the campaign has yet to start proper. I mean, as we were just saying, we don't have the Fianna Fáil candidate yet. We don't know who Sinn Féin are putting forward, and the debates will probably make a big difference to the whole thing. Jennifer, your candidate that you're backing is Catherine Connolly.
Absolutely.
With the Labour Party telling us that they haven't decided what kind of financial backing they're giving to Catherine Connolly. What about the Sock Dems? Are you helping? Are you putting your hands in your pockets?
We are. So I think for the Social Democrats, look, those discussions are ongoing and we're working very closely with Catherine's team. One of the strengths that Social Democrats have and we will and have offered absolutely is all our support on the ground. We have a huge number of members, a huge number of councillors across the country who are 100% engaged with Catherine's mm-hmm. team and are you know, getting ready to get on the doors, handing out flyers and having those discussions with people.
It's such an opportunity though, isn't it, a presidential election to put somebody out from the Sock Dems, from your own political party?
Yeah, but I mean, look at the Sock Dems. I mean, there's sort of reality of numbers as well, you know, and making mm-hmm. sure, you know, trying to get the 20 to get someone across the line, and I think this was a really important. We did want to be involved in this campaign, and Catherine. Like, I've watched Catherine over the last 6 years and the issues that she's dealt with and the things that she has been so vocal and so strong and passionate about, like things like the mother and baby homes. You know, when Catherine was on the floor of the Dáil, the whole Dáil sat in silence listening to her talk and advocate mm-hmm. for the survivors of those mother and baby homes.
And yet she's been asked questions about, you know, meeting a supporter of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, her involvement supporting Gemma O'Doherty, her relationship with Mick Wallace. You know, these are the things that she's answering questions on. And some say she hasn't answered those questions satisfactorily.
Well, look, there are obviously questions are being put to Catherine, as they will to all the other candidates, you know, in relation to those specific issues. I mean, like Catherine went to Syria on, you know, she went over to a Palestinian refugee camp. She went over to meet NGOs over there, and to she met someone in the Chamber of Commerce, you know. But she didn't go over. If anyone, I suppose, if anyone has been watching Catherine over the last number of years, as I have, if they would think that that woman will be in any way supporter of a mergers regime, I think they're just crackers. Mm-hmm. I mean, Catherine has such integrity, but like a huge amount of compassion. And there's no way that Catherine would be in support of anyone like that. So I think, look, over the course of the campaign, like, presidential campaigns are incredibly robust. And I think because Catherine was out first, I think, you know, she got a lot of these questions put to her and she's answered them. And, you know, look at the people, you know, it is really important that, that the public get to know the candidates, get to know where they stand on things. And I'm looking forward to, I suppose, the other candidates entering the field as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about Jim Gavin here, but, you know, I don't know where Jim Gavin would stand on many issues. So I think it's really, the next few weeks will be, it'll be very interesting to hear where each of the candidates stand on the issues that are important
and
to people.
And of course, John, Sinn Féin, we don't know whether they'll be backing Catherine Connolly or not. Do you think that's looking less likely now, that they'll have their own candidate?
I'm pretty definitive that Sinn Féin have to contest this election if they're to retain any kind of credibility. They've had the last two elections, locals and Europeans, and then the Dáil elections were a big disappointment for them. They need to try and steady the ship and make a showing. I think Mary Lou MacDonald could potentially win. But whether they, it's their decision on who they actually field, but I think they must field.
Mm-hmm. They must field. But time is running short now, although if you look back at past presidential elections in particular, Sinn Féin has always left it quite late.
Yeah, they were late into the 2011 one with Martin McGuinness, and almost as late, with slightly earlier, with Leo Ria, that they've left it till September. I think this time there's an attempt to mimic a general election, a Dáil election. For example, 2011, the thing dribbled on from the May bank holiday right up to Halloween. 7-8 times the length of a general election campaign duration. And it added to it being, you know, an absolute farce, a mess. So I think this time all parties, and more than anything Sinn Féin, will want a short, sharp shock.
Uh-huh. Now, let's move on to Alexandra Duan, who I spoke to at the top of the programme in Fairview, principal of a school there, worried that if she goes in on Sunday, there'll be rats in the school. Paul, this is because of the school secretaries and caretakers strike. Another mess, and one that doesn't look like it's going to get resolved anytime soon. And it's just really interesting to see politically how this has played out, because your guys seem to be looking to Helen McEntee to sort it out, whereas Fine Gael are looking at your man, Jack Chambers, and the union says it's your man who has to fix it.
Yeah, look, I think across the communities, but also across government in the backbenches, there's a lot of support for school takers, school secretaries and caretakers. And the reason for that is that we have a system where some school secretaries and caretakers are public servants, have a public sector pension and so on, and others aren't. And I think that's a deeply unfair arrangement. It's a legacy of governance and patronage bodies and all of that stuff. But it, on the face of it, it's very unfair. And the way to resolve any industrial relations dispute is to get around the table. Now, I have been saying all week to my ministers and to people in my party that we should be getting to the table and having talks. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the place, that's the place to resolve this dispute.
This morning that they've been told to go there with, you know, no guarantees that this will be sorted out. They don't trust that it's going to be sorted out. They want to know that they're actually going to get somewhere if they call the strike off. You can understand that, right?
Absolutely. I was out on the pickets on Monday and Tuesday, and people were at my office and we spoke to them. And like, there's a range of demands. Like, there's many people looking for retrospection, so full retrospection of a pension going back for their entire employment period. There's other issues around what the impact would be on sick leave and so on. And there is the potential for this to be proliferate into other sectors of the public service.
Don't accept that, but you're saying it could be a risk.
It will be inevitable. But I have spent all week saying on Forza's behalf and on the people who are members of Forza that government should be coming to the table to resolve this. So I continue that point, is that whoever is involved in this dispute, they should come to the table. I do accept that there's a lack of trust there, but you only build that trust around the table.
And is it up to Jack Chambers now to sort this out, and his department?
It's very clear the arrangements here. The Lyme Minister is the Minister for Education, and the Minister responsibility
she doesn't for, deal
and
with
the,
pensions.
And the Minister responsibility for public expenditure sets public sector pay. Both of them have a responsibility, and the overall government has a responsibility to make sure schools remain open and so on. Mm-hmm. So I'm not seeking to divide anything here. I would say in my own party there's very strong support for these schools secretaries and caretakers, as I believe there is in many parts of Ireland.
But your colleagues could sort this out now, yeah, you know, and it could all be sorted before school starts again on Monday.
As I've said, all week, many people in my party have been calling for people to come to the table to try and resolve this. It's where you solve industrial relations disputes. It prevents them getting bitter and having unnecessarily long strike periods. Let's get to the table and try and resolve it.
I mean, you must be very frustrated with the Department of Public Expenditure. You've been out on the picket lines. Let's be clear, you know.
Absolutely. As I said very clearly, Claire, and I think many people in my own party have said this, the place to resolve this dispute, I believe there should be an intervention from the Labour Court.
Where's the sticking point? It's your government, you're part of the party, you've been out in the picket lines, so where's the problem?
Look, clearly, and I'm not saying that there isn't a gap between the two departments on one hand and those on strike on the other. There's very clear gap and very significant issues there. But I'm saying to both sides, and I've been saying it all week to my colleagues, the way to resolve this is to come around the table. I think that's where we need to resolve. Okay. That's where we need to resolve. The place to do this isn't necessarily over the airwaves in a studio and so on. I'm around industrial relations. I've experienced of it for some time. The way to resolve a dispute is in negotiation.
Okay, well, Jennifer, I'm sure you're seeing the impact on schools in your constituency as well. And the truth is, this will be fixed. It will be resolved. But we may have to go through a very difficult week or two or 3 weeks before we get there.
Yeah, and look at I think I was out on the picket lines with some schools in Wicklow yesterday, and I must say, like, the amount of support that they were getting from the public was incredible. Like, every car going by was bumping at them. Like, it was like, so this is not going to go away. They have the support of the public, and they have the support of their school communities. And I think, you know, as Paul said, like, this comes down to fairness. Like, the way they are treated at the moment is just simply unfair. You know, sick leave, leave entitlements, pensions. You know, they do the work, the exact same work that, say, secretaries in the ETBs do, but mm-hmm. the ETBs...
And they get those
they
rights.
Get those rights. So, and you know, there's, I think, 2,500 across the country. So, you know, we're not talking an insurmountable amount of people.
But
so
there
I
is
think
that concern that there may be repercussions here and precedent may be set for other groups. Now, I know Forza doesn't accept that, but it could be the case. And there's you can see that there would be back pay claims made for people who are in existing employment or who have retired.
So, like, what I would say is that the precedent has been set by the fact that other secretaries and other schools get it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we do have to have a fair system, and we do have to value people.
Which minister is responsible, do you think?
Look, as far as I'm concerned, this is a government issue, you know, and I think to have different parties within government pointing the finger at the other party and saying, well, you know, it's your job to fix this. That is not what we need. You know, the government needs to act as one here and actually get this sorted. So I think there's sort of politics being played with this as well. And, you know, seeing all the government TDs out supporting Forza, you know, like, if you're out supporting them, well, then just make sure that your government gets this across the line.
Would you prefer us not to be out supporting them?
What I want is to see it getting it sorted, because, you know, it isn't fair. Like, none of the people I spoke to on the picket line yesterday, or indeed outside Leinster House earlier in the week, they want to be in their schools.
Absolutely.
They want to be with those children. And they're really upset by the fact that they can't be. And they're being forced out. Now, saying that, they are adamant they are not going back in. So this has to be sorted. So I don't know whether the Taoiseach needs to take this on and just get it across the line. But it can't be the case that, you know, that one department's pointing the finger at the other. Like, that's not how you run a government.
Yeah, and we're coming up to the budget, of course, like this. And we know the pressure that's there on the public finances. But will the government just have to concede on this?
Oh, I mean, Claire, listening to your item at the start of the show, I think that this is an incredibly effective strike. And I think that the invisible, unseen work of secretaries and caretakers has never been more visible. I think the public sentiment is that, obviously, when you have rubbish piling up, invoices being unpaid, that the work that these people do is a public service. So they should be treated like other public servants. And the thing I thought was most pertinent was, I think it was very clear talking to that teacher in Fairview, that teaching principals who don't have the capacity to take on admin work will come to a point where they might have to consider closing schools. That will obviously have an effect on all children, but in particular, children with additional needs who need the regulation and the routine of going to school. I think in that context, this row, whether it's real or perceived between education and DEEPER, is incredibly unedifying. Who cares if it's Helen McEntee or Jack Chambers? The public don't see it that way. They see it as a government issue that needs a unified response. Like, nobody who has a child with additional needs at home is going to be directing blame at Jack Chambers or Helen McEntee. It's going to be at the government as a whole.
Mm-hmm. John, what do you think? Is this one that government will have to concede?
Yes. All week we've been listening to this. Next week is, as was predicted, on your programme particularly, there was a school principal from Carlow and another school principal. They each predicted that early next week was a cliff edge. And there is every chance, if there isn't movement, that we will see kids being sent home from schools and schools closed. And the thing will really blow up at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So undoubtedly, it's a very popular case. By the way, one of the things that I would be very strong on is that the people involved are entitled to retrospection, because many of them are not young people. And their chances of accruing pension rights, particularly, are very of any worth, are very slim. You know, so there will have to be retrospection.
Really
here.
Weird situation where they're paid by the public service but don't get the same rights as other people
it's
who are
patently
paid.
Unfair.
It's more complex than that, Claire. Actually, so you might have two independent parish schools right opposite each other. One school secretary might be employed on the 78-79 scheme, which gave them their full public service status. And the secretary in the adjoining school might have had a later contract and doesn't have that status. You might have a secretary that has it and a caretaker that doesn't, or vice versa. So there's no doubt that there needs to be reform of how school secretaries and caretakers are remunerated and their paying conditions. Mm. I think it is unique, because when you look at it in a school, almost everybody else in the school has that public service status. That's not the case in other cases. But I would say to everybody involved, the way to resolve it is to come around the table. Like, I accept that there isn't trust there, but the only way you resolve an industrial relations issue is by coming around the table and trying to find the areas of common ground.
But you can see why the secretaries and caretakers won't sit around the table and won't suspend the action unless they get certain guarantees. You can understand that, can't you?
Yeah, but like all negotiations, they always work best when there's no preconditions. And they always work best when people aren't involved in active industrial relations. That's a kind of standard principle trade unions and employers all operate by. So look, my view is that if we can get around the table, I think there is areas of common ground.
But in order to get around the table, the government is going to have to give a really strong signal that this is going to be sorted out in a way that is fair to these people.
From speaking to people that I know in Forza, and I think there are back channels that are happening in terms of trying to communicate what negotiations would look like. The point is that you'd only really start to get into the teeth of resolving the issue, and I think everyone wants to resolve it, if we come around the table.
Are you calling on Forza to suspend the strikes?
No, look, that's a decision by Forza, and look, I respect their right to, first of all, to strike, and second of all, to make a decision as to what they do. I studied industrial relations myself. I've seen it for a long time. You only resolve the issue when you're around the table.
Okay, well, let's see where it goes over the weekend. Our time is up, but thank you all for coming in. Alan Coyne, Paul McCall of Jennifer Whitmore and John Downey.